Today, I am excited to be joined by one of the most successful high school basketball coaches in the state of Minnesota. He led his teams to 7 state championships and also the number one ranking in the country this season for girls high school basketball. He was the head coach of the girls program at Hopkins High School for 21 seasons until recently stepping down, and he is Brian Cosgriff. Welcome to the program, Kaz. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
You bet. You bet. So it was just, not even probably a month ago, Kaz, where we, you know, found out that you were, you know, stepping aside from your position there at Hopkins and, you know, leaving the team with a 62-game winning streak and, you know, all of the success that you guys have had. And, you know, I'm sure some people were surprised. Some people may not have been, but what kind of went into your decision and stepping down from your role there?
Well, I think people that were close to me kind of knew that the ending was near. I just felt like my principal had moved on to a different job, and I just loved her. And then my best friend at work, Dane Stavlo, who was a custodian, he retired. And then my sister got sick. And my brother passed away at a young age. And my other brother, he's not doing very well health-wise either. That it just seemed like life was bigger than basketball. It wasn't my identity. It's something that I enjoyed for the most part. But it was time for me to move on. And then with the emergence of COVID and all the uncertainty that has to do with that right now, I feel it was a really good decision. I'm not regretting it for a day.
Yeah, that's, I think a lot of people, you know, with the COVID pandemic have kind of shifted focus on a lot of areas in life, you know, myself included, and sounds like you a little bit too, even though sounds like your mind was made up, you know, for the majority of that purpose prior. But it's amazing how your perspective can shift once something like that kind of comes into your life. So, I got to ask, Kaz, were you more emotional addressing the team to let them know you were going to no longer be their coach, or at the end of this season when your season got stopped one game shy of winning another state championship?
You know, I'm not quite sure. I know the day that I announced was a difficult morning from the standpoint I was nervous about it. I mean, it brought on those same kind of feelings I have before every game, anxious. That sort of thing. The kids took it really well. I think, like I had said to them when I told them I was moving on, I said, this has always been about you guys. It's never been about me. It's always been your team. And regardless if you want to work hard or you want to sleep in or you want to do whatever it is, it's going to fall on your shoulders. We were just the vessels that guided you along the way. But my thing is that, you know, I just feel like it was ready to go. I wasn't that nervous. And after I'd done it, I knew it was the right decision to make. I had talked with my high school football coach. He and I are very tight. You know, he said it was be a difficult day, but yet when I was done, I didn't regret it. And I've talked to a number of other coaches that were very successful, and they had talked about what they knew it was time. And actually I knew it was time too. So it's all good.
That's good. That's good to hear. So obviously, Kaz, you were at Hopkins for 21 seasons, but you didn't start there. Can you tell us maybe the beginning part of your coaching journey and where that kind of got going?
Yeah, I was really fortunate to work with some really good coaches. And I started off as an assistant under Keith Erickson at McAllister, and that's where I went. And I worked with him and Coach Jim Dimmick, and two very, very highly intelligent men and great basketball coaches. And then I was fortunate enough to get a sophomore job at Armstrong, Robbinsdale Armstrong, under Larry Weehm. He gave me my first break to run my own team. And we had a great deal of success over there. I mean, I think we lost 2 or 3 games in 3 years. And I really thought I was the stuff. thinking this is easy, right? And then I went over to Breck and became the head boys coach, and realized I wasn't the stuff. I had great kids, but I was playing against the De La Salles of the world and Bill Carlson over at Minnehaha, he had great teams, and Bob Mesel at Matamidi, and all these guys, they're really established coaches. And I proceeded to realize how much basketball I didn't know. And then I was always teaching at Hopkins during that time. And then Kenny Novak got the boys job over at Hopkins. And Hedstrom was his assistant. John Hedstrom was the AD at Park Center. Mm-hmm. Got the head job at Blaine. So he had an opening on his staff. And I just figured, you know, since I'm teaching, I should probably be coaching in the same district, that sort of thing. And decided to take a JV position with Kenny for 9 years. And we had a great deal of success under Kenny. And when you coach with Kenny, your job is to basically sit and learn. And that's what I did for 9 years. And then I knew if I was ever going to be a head coach, that it wasn't probably going to be in Hopkins, because Kenny's a legend. I mean, I think he's probably the second all-time winningest boys coach in the state behind Bob McDonald. Mm-hmm. And the girls' job opened up. And I loved teaching at Hopkins. I loved everything about Hopkins, the culture, the people, the facilities, everything about it. Yeah, but I had never coached girls. And I just approached it like I was just going to be the same. I mean, coaching is the way I approached it. I don't know that that was the right attitude to take, but for whatever reason, Ron Selno, the athletic director at the time, gave me a shot. And it was quite controversial because the coach that was there before me was on an interim basis, but he was just voted the section coach of the year. So they decided to give it to me, somebody who had never coached, and he was the assistant under the previous coach, but he was voted the girls section coach of the year. So they took a shot on me, and, you know, it's probably the best move I've ever made professionally in terms of, you know, coaching and teaching. And, you know, the rest is kind of history. I just had so many great players and so fortunate to be part of it. I essentially brought what I learned from Kenny to the girls' side.
Yeah, I would say it worked. And you found success, that's for sure. So what was the program like, Kaz, before you got there? Obviously, there must have been some success with, you know, you just mentioning that the interim coach was section coach of the year prior. But what was the overall girls' program like before you took over?
Well, the program always, they always had talent. They always had a lot of talent, but they just never could seem to get anywhere with it. I mean, they had some great players come through there, but they were always like second or third, or, you know, they'd get a number two or three seed, but then they could never get out of the section. They had never won a conference championship in the time of when it was one Hopkins High School. I don't know what they did when they were Lindbergh or Eisenhower, that sort of thing, but they had never won anything. And so, I mean, there was always talent. There was a good feeder system. Wonderful facilities. So the pieces to the puzzle were there. It just was. What we did is we took those puzzle pieces and then put it together and really ran with it.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say are the one or two or three things, Kaz, that kind of push the program over the hump, you know, to outside of the players, I should say, to find success there?
Well, I think the number one thing that we did is we created a culture that, you know what, you're going to come here and you're going to work hard. You're going to dedicate yourself to this thing. And at the end of the day, win or lose, you're going to know you went down swinging. We created the culture, and very, very lucky to have a player like Leslie Knight, who was at the time of when I got the program, she was in eighth grade. And then we had Jordan Barnes and you know, Schwichtenberg and Jill Cope and Molly Jensen. And we had some really good players that were buying into that culture, and they were tremendous kids and worked really hard. And so our first year we tied Armstrong for the conference title. Now we had lost to them twice, but they also had two losses. So at that time, and I think they still do it that way, you have co-champions, you know, head to head didn't matter. Mm-hmm. But that was our first conference title in school history. And we got to the sections and we lost to Armstrong in section semis that year. Following year, our second year, we actually didn't win the conference. We took second. But then we get to the sections and we were 20-6, I believe, in our second year. And we got the fifth seed overall, which to me, 20-6 in the Lake Conference in the fifth seed, you know, that's a pretty tough draw, right?
I would say so.
So anyways, we get over there and we're in the section semis and we're playing Armstrong. And Leslie was a ninth grader at the time. And I put her at a point guard and we basically held the ball on Armstrong. I mean, it was like 14-10 at half, you know, we were down, but we made it a possession game and lost in overtime on a last second shot to Armstrong, who eventually went on to go to the state tournament. And then in our third year, we got to the state tournament. We won the section and we took third. And that was Leslie's sophomore year. We had won we beat a really good Elk River team. And back then the state tournament was held. The first round was held at high schools. And we went to Monticello High School and played Elk River. And that was the first time Hopkins had been in the state tournament as Hopkins High School. I think Lindbergh went back in 78 or something like that.
Okay.
But they didn't ever win it. But so for the next 2 years, we took third in the state. We lost to, we lost to Blaine, and I think we lost to Eastview in 03. In 02, we lost to Blaine, and in 03, we lost to Eastview. And then in 04, Leslie Knight's senior year, we won it. And then 05, we lost in overtime to Kennedy in the state championship. And then in 06, which I think was our shining moment, we won it because that team didn't have the true superstar. I mean, when we had Leslie, she was kind of, you know, the best player in the state that year. Mm-hmm. And when we won it in 06, and 05 was a great team too. We just lost to Kennedy in overtime. And we had lost Leslie Knight and everyone thought the party was over because she had gone on to the U. And then in 05 and 06, we got back to the state championship and then finally won it in 06. And then Taylor Hill came along and we didn't get back till 2010, 11. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think that we created a culture of hard work and dedication. And if you do that, good things generally happen. So that's kind of the story of it all.
Yeah, and you've talked a lot about your players a lot, Kaz, and just how, you know, it's about them and everything. And this year the past couple of years, you've had arguably one of the most successful and recognizable female players that Minnesota's ever seen in Paige Beckers. How good is Paige, in your opinion, Kaz?
Well, I think she's the most instinctive player the state's ever seen. And I really do think she's going to end up being, if she stays healthy, now it takes a lot of luck. You got to stay healthy. I think she's going to end up being the best player that the state has ever seen. I don't want this to sound arrogant or anything like this, but I will tell you this. I think if they had what they had on the men's side, where a kid could come out after 1 year and there was all that money waiting for him, she could have been a number one draft pick. I really do think that. Mm-hmm. I think she's that instinctive and that skilled. She's got to get stronger, got to get quicker and all those kinds of things, but she's so instinctive. In fact, Kenny Novak has said to me on a couple of occasions that of all the great players that we've had, he said he thinks that she could have probably played for him,
you know,
which is huge, you know. So, and the fact that Gino Auriemma, the best coach in the country, or at least the winningest coach in the country on the women's side, has been in our gym probably a dozen times recruiting her. And I've been on the phone quite often with him about her and the stuff that he says, you know, that I've read over the internet and that sort of thing. He kind of agrees. I mean, I don't know if he's going to come on and say that now that she's there, but he was saying that in the recruitment process. That's for sure.
I've from everything I've seen, Kaza would completely agree. So what was it like dealing with Coach Auriemma? Cause I imagine that had to be interesting and, you know, maybe a little bit nerve wracking. Like you said, he's probably the most successful women's coach of all time. You know, maybe him and Pat Summitt are probably the two that come to mind, but what were your interactions like with him?
He's just the most regular guy there is. And he doesn't mince words with you either. I mean, he's very direct and, I love that about him. And he was very hospitable. I mean, every time he came to town, we went out to eat afterwards. And you know, or we, not every time, but you know, when he was in town for on recruiting visits and he'd have to get a bite to eat, and his assistant Chris Daly was amazing. By far the best recruiter I've ever seen, ever met. I mean, he just did a tremendous job. When he said he was, when he said UConn was going to come to your open gym, it was him and Chris Daly, right? It wasn't the third assistant. It wasn't, you know, the fourth assistant. It was always him, which to me spoke volumes, because a lot of times, you know, the head coach might come in once, but at the end of the day, it was usually an assistant that was coming up to our open gyms. Mm-hmm. And he was there all the time. And that's essentially, you know, why Paige went there.
Yep. It's all about the relationships, you know.
It just really is.
Like you said, with, you know, your relationship with your principal and the janitor and, right, and all that. It's, I really believe that the relationships are what really matters the most when it boils down to it.
Well, that's part of the reason why I lasted as long as I did, was because my assistant, Chuck Burmeister, he, you know, we've been high school buddies together, and he had been with me just about every year. And then my brother, Barry, who is the real brains behind the outfit. Let me tell you, I just think that he was amazing for our program, and he was what separated us from a lot of other programs in terms of the organization. You know, not the advertising, but just he was like a sports information director. He had all the stats. He had all the records. He did all the film work. Just, you know, just, I can't believe that every program has had someone like him to do all that stuff, because if I had to do it, it wouldn't have got done.
Yeah. Everyone has their strengths, you know, and hopefully you can have the people around you that, you know, supplement maybe some things that you're aren't as strong at. So obviously you had this huge successful run with Paige there, you know, and this year caused a little different element. You had a film crew in, you know, for the documentary All Eyes on Us. I was able to watch it on YouTube, all the episodes. Can you tell us what that was like this year? Is that something you enjoyed? Did you like having them around? Did you not like having them around? How was that experience?
Well, you know, the thing about it was, is that Christian, the guy from Slam Magazine, was just an amazing young man. He was just very, very nice, and he cared about the kids, and he was like part of the team. He was there so much. Those guys came in from New York a lot, and they spent a lot of time here. I think it didn't bother me at all. It didn't. When Paige got on the cover of Slam Magazine, it's like it exploded, because after every game, I bet you we played in front of 6 to 8 packed houses. I'm talking 3,000 fans would be there. And just about after every game, there would probably be 100 to 150 people deep wanting Paige's picture or autograph. And Paige stayed for every one of them. And I had never seen anything like that in girls basketball. I mean, I just hadn't seen that. And we had played in front of some big packed crowds before, but usually it was a section final game, you know, that type of, but we were doing it during the regular season. In fact, one time we went up to play Grand Rapids, and Grand Rapids' AD is a former teacher and coach at Hopkins, so she was very hospitable. But it was the night after our Wayzata game, and Paige was pretty sore and beat up, and Grand Rapids was down this year. They just were down. They didn't have a very good team, so we decided to, you know, do the load management thing on Paige, and she sat that game. She didn't suit up. She didn't dress, that sort of thing. There was probably 3/4 of the gym there, and they were very disappointed that Paige didn't play. There was people that came from Chicago to get her picture and, her, you know, meet Paige Beckers. There was one young lady who was a Native American, and she'd come from the reservation and made this big, huge sign. And when she got to meet Paige and get her picture taken with Paige, she literally broke down crying. I mean, she was like, she had seen, you know, Michael Jordan, for crying out loud. I mean, it was very moving. I mean, it's something that I had never seen before. And Paige gave her a big hug and did all kinds of pictures and gave her autograph. And people would come up after the game and want her autograph. So, I mean, it was something like I had never seen in girls basketball. And, you know, Paige was amazing with everybody. So having the film crew there didn't bother me at all. You know, I didn't necessarily like I was getting mic'd up because I was always worried about what I might say or, you know, bodily functions and that sort of thing, you know, so. And they'll catch everything. But I told them, I said, before any of these go out, I want final cut, you know. So, but I didn't have to change anything. It was great having them around.
That's good. Yeah, you go back to how Paige was with the fans and treated everyone. Cause I can attest firsthand, she was at a Timberwolves game this year where we honored her and recognized her. And this was at a Wolves game. And she wasn't even the focus of attention, but she signed every autograph. She took every picture and she did it with a smile on her face. And that just really impressed me as someone who's seen, you know, all sorts of different levels of players, men's and women's, just how she handled herself during that. Because I'm sure, like you said, she's been bothered or asked a ton throughout the season. And, you know, here she is just trying to enjoy a game, but she couldn't have been more gracious. And I was just really impressed by that.
That was a fun night, though. Thank you, by the way, because a lot of us got to go to the game and they were great seats. I mean, it was fun. But see, that's kind of the ride we were on this past year. With the exception of not getting to play in that state championship game, it was an amazing ride and an experience that I'll never forget. And that being one of the experiences that we were fortunate of. You know, when you get tickets that are that low to the Timberwolves, it's like, you don't even really care what the score is. You're amazed at how good those guys are and how big they are, you know. And it was cool to be there and ride Paige's coattails that night.
Definitely. And you've had some very successful players over the years, cause not just Paige, but also, you know, someone like Ania Coffey, who you won 3 state championships in a row with her as a part of your program. So what were things that Nia and Paige, you know, brought or had that was a part of their maybe basketball DNA or work ethic that made them so good that separated them from the rest?
Well, what I loved about Nia was Nia's probably the most athletic kid I've ever coached. Could run and jump. In fact, she attempted a dunk in one of our games one night. Plus, she received a lot of coaching from her father. And you know, when your father is a former Timberwolf and former Gopher great.
Yep, Richard Coffey.
Richard Coffey. You know, you're blessed with some good attributes just to start with. And then the other thing is that, you know, Nia was an amazing player, but her sister, Sydney Coffey, kind of flew under the radar. And we called her the silent assassin because you weren't taking the ball from her. And if the ball was in her hands and you needed to foul, she was making free throws. She was an amazing defender, great rebounder. Went on to have a great career at Marist. I mean, she'll end up in the Hall of Fame out there. And so it was fun coaching the sisters. It was fun hanging out with Richard. And then we had Taylor Anderson and Aaron O'Toole, the O'Toole family, and Michaela Shackelford and Steph Senshin. I mean, honestly, man, I look back and I go, how can I have so many great players? I mean, honestly, it was really an incredible ride. And I don't think people understand. In my time, I've never seen a 4A team win 3 state titles in a row. 4A. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's happened on the boys' side yet even.
Yeah, I can't. Nothing's coming to mind. I mean, obviously, Hopkins boys had a good run, but I don't think they ever put them consecutively together. There was the De La Salle stuff, but that was at 3A.
That's at 3A. And 3A's, in my humble opinion, is a hell of a lot different than 4A. Mm-hmm. It just is. You know, I look at the Lake Conference and that kind of thing. I want to preface this. I'm not trying to be arrogant, but yet the Lake Conference is kind of the big dogs from the standpoint your schools are 4,000 students or 3,000 students. You better be good every year, you know? And we battled those guys every year. So in order to do it 3 times in a row, you know, that's, to me, that's pretty impressive. And the fact that I was there for that, not that I was the reason for that because I had great players, but I was there for that and had a hand in it. I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, and you should be. And you mentioned, you know, the kind of the late conference, you know, being a powerhouse, cause the past few years, you've had this huge rivalry with Wayzata, you know, arguably the two best teams in the state, probably in the same conference. And oh, by the way, in the same section. What are your thoughts on, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that rivalry, cause, and then, you know, how did you feel it was maybe a little bit unfair that perhaps the two best teams were meeting and one of them didn't get to go to even the state tournament?
You know, to me, I never like using the unfair thing because life is unfair.
Right.
You're dealt what you're dealt. But I will tell you this, the Wayzata-Hopkins rivalry was really amazing. But we also had a huge rivalry with Minnetonka. I mean, we played each other in the state tournament back 2-3 years ago or whatever. I can't remember it was. And they had beaten us once and we had beaten them once and we were playing for the third time in state championship, which they eventually ended up beating us. But that one, the Wayzata thing, I'm telling you, that those rivalries were really hard. They were very difficult, very intense. I probably scouted them more than any team I've ever scouted before. And they knew us and we knew them. 2 years ago, they had easily the second best team in the state. And we played them three times at our place and we beat them three times, but two of the three were pretty close. Last year, we had played them the first time with Amaya Battle was out for us. And we beat them by 10 at our place, but they were up on us at half. The second time we played them, they had lost Johnson. They're good. They're really good. Probably their best player. And then Stewart got in foul trouble. We beat them pretty easily. And then the third time at our place, it was a battle. It was 3 points here, 5 points there, you know, back to three, back to two. And then I think we eventually ended up winning by 11 or 12, but Stewart was amazing for them. You know, they're going to be good from now until, you know, hell freezes over. They've got so many players. Their traveling organization's amazing. Former Viking kind of runs it over there.
Yes, Chad Greenway.
Chad Greenway, and he does an amazing job. So they're going to be great from here on out. Minnetonka, Leah does a great job over there. They're going to be great from here on ever. You know, and these are, and then I just love Kent Hamry at St. Michael. Oh my
yes,
God.
Kent's
that
great.
Guy, he's a working machine, and his program, you know, they're in the Lake Conference now. And definitely an addition to the Lake Conference. They're growing leaps and bounds. They got facilities, and Kent works his butt off and plays very, very intense basketball. That rivalry, I would tell you, that was up there too. I mean, it got more and more as that town has grown, the rivalry between Hopkins and St. Michael. I mean, last year we had to play them twice. And both games were very intense, and Kent does a great job. So, you know, Edina, Eden Prairie was down for a couple of years, but Ellen's got them back on track, and they're amazing. They're going to be really good. So, you know, the unfair thing, it is what it is.
It's right.
I do wish that the State High School League would go to 64 seed, though. I do wish that.
For the big class?
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about that for, I bet, 15 years. We've been talking about that for 15 years, and it just never seems to catch any steam. And every coach I've ever talked to says they want it. So, but you know, it's probably above my pay grade, and I don't know what goes into all that sort of thing. So,
yeah. And you mentioned, you know, Kaz, when we were talking about some of your championship teams and the success you had, you made it to state a number of times, but there were plenty of years where you didn't win the state title. Do you ever think back on some of the ones you missed out on, like, gosh, you know, we really should have won that year, but we didn't, or anything like that? Do you ever look back on some of those with, you know, I'm sure every coach does, but what are your thoughts on some of those games?
You know, the funny thing about it is when we played Stillwater last year, we were down at half And then we came back and had an amazing second half. And afterwards, everyone talked about how good a year Stillwater had. You know, they made to the state tournament, their state state finals, and it was a great year. When we would lose in the finals, it was like they can't win the big one. You know, the game's past Coach Cos behind, you know, passed him over. He's getting old, all those kinds of things. And it wasn't seen as a great year, right? Anytime you get to the state tournament and you come through the section that we have to come through, it's a great year. It's a great year. Of course, you always want to win it. You always want to win it. But no one can ever take away from the fact at the end of the day, you know what, you're in the state tournament. I mean, we've been in the state finals, not the state tournament, the state finals, six straight years in a row. All right. And some we won, some we didn't. Now, those are great years. Those are great teams. And I always tell people, you know, whether you win it or you lose it, you're always kind of sad after that last game because, you know, I'm never going to coach Paige again. I'm never going to coach Nia Coffey, Sid Coffey, Leslie Knight, Annie Isser, all these players, they're moving on to the next phase of their life, whereas I'm staying there, right? And so that would get to me a little bit. But I think one of the biggest, you know, the coolest thing for us was the 05 team. And that was a year after Leslie Knight left. And we weren't supposed to be any good. We weren't supposed to be any good. And we got to the state finals against Bloomington Kennedy, and they had Jenna Smith, and they were really good. And we took them to overtime. And we had Tiana Wilkinson and Jillian Shirley and Abby Green. And I'm convinced if Abby Green doesn't fall out of that game, we're going to win it. And what happened was that she picked up a cheap third foul, and she was really pissed about it. And I got another fourth foul and fifth foul before I could get her out of the game.
Oh.
And then that was it. She fouled out, and Abby was a tough, tough player for us, very smart. Ended up going out to Rhode Island and playing out there for a year and graduating in 3 years. And so, I mean, that was a tough one for us. And then the following year, we played them again in the state finals and beat them by 17. So, and that was without Leslie again. So those were real gratifying years.
What would you say is your biggest strength as a coach, Cos?
I think my biggest strength is that I have a tremendous work ethic. I really do. And I've had great assistants. I mean, I think I worked really hard at trying to be the best we could possibly be. And I have a lot of regrets sometimes on how you act and how you handle some things. You know, we're all flawed individuals, no question about it. No one's perfect. But I think as a coach, my work ethic and the fact that I had great assistance with me as well along the way, and we stayed organized, and no one was responsible for one area. We were responsible for everything. So
how stressful is it being a head coach, Cos, and also being a head coach of a successful team or program? I know I've talked to a number of coaches on both the boys and girls side, and they've mentioned, you know, some of their most stressful years are the years where you think they would have the least stress when they're really, really good and people would be happy and excited. But for whatever reason, you know, there's just this ultimate pressure on them, either from internally or the fans or whoever. But what's maybe that, or what was that like in kind of your world?
Well, once we created the culture and we had some success, the bar was set that high every year. I mean, it just was. And then we always had talent. You know, when you have talent, you're expected to do great things. And, you know, I felt that. I have anxiety issues to begin with. And so before games, I would not feel the greatest. And what motivated me was to work hard is I didn't know that I really enjoyed the winning that much, but I hated the losing. I just hated it. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons why we work so hard is because I didn't ever want to experience that losing thing. The other thing that motivated me was that, you know, these kids have put in a lot of time And I want them to experience the joy that comes along with winning championships, with working as hard as you possibly can and being successful. And hopefully all these other aspects of playing sports will carry over later on in your life. But honestly, it was very stressful, and it was probably more put on me by me. It wasn't like anybody was saying, if you don't do this, you're going to get fired. If you don't do that, you know, you're a crappy coach or anything. It was put on more by me. And then Hopkins has always been a basketball community. It just always has been. I mean, you go back to the 50s and they had great teams under Metzold and then Coach Novak Sr. and Tom Hutton and, you know, now Novak Jr. And I wanted to bring part of that culture to the girls' side. And, you know, fortunately we were able to do that. But it didn't come without a cost. I just felt like I didn't get to see my daughter play as much as I would have liked. I feel like there are some things that I probably didn't handle real well as a coach in terms of with some players that have gone through the program, that kind of thing. And that still bothers me to this day. It just does. But, you know, you can control what you can control and you move on from there.
Yeah, what would you say you enjoyed most about coaching?
Oh, the relationships. The relationships, the ride. I look back on it and I just kind of go, well, first of all, I got to coach with my brother all these years. And some days we'd fight like cats and dogs, he and I. And the relationship I had with, you know, Burmeister and my assistants and all the players. And, I mean, it was just the relationships were the most fun. And then, you know, anytime you can get to the state tournament, that's at a whole different level. It really is. You know, the funny thing about it is the first year we went in 02, you know, we had the band leading us out. We had the police escort out to Highway 169 and the fire trucks and all that sort of thing. By the end, we were lucky if we could get out early from school. We were lucky to get the early release. So, and then, you know, in 02, when we came back, we had the thing after the state tournament and they welcomed us back and all that sort of thing. And at the end, they did it on a Monday in the mall with the wrestling team and the other basketball team or the swim team. So they did it all in one shot. So it almost became old hat for the school, to be honest with you. They expected us to be there every year.
Yeah. What was that like? Cause you know, the expectations that, like you said, the difference in the celebration from the first year to the last year. I mean, that's gotta be kind of unique, I would think.
Well, cause I remember hearing about Chisago. We played them in, you know, was it Cambridge, I say, or was it Chisago? I can't remember who we played this year in the first round, but
Cambridge, I think it was
Cambridge. Right. I always do that. Cambridge, Chisago. But anyways, we played Cambridge and they had the band and the police escort. And I mean, they were just, it was great to hear what they were experiencing because that's what we experienced at the start. I always wanted to get the number one seed in the state tournament because you got the 10 o'clock game. Then the 10 o'clock game means the whole school gets to get out of school. Mm-hmm. All right. If you played at noon or two, no one was really probably going to come because they weren't getting out of early release for school. Right. So the 10 o'clock game, we had 2,000 or 3,000 fans there from Hopkins. I think we couldn't find any more buses to get all our kids there. And then you'd play the 6 o'clock. If you won that one, you'd play the 6 o'clock, but you got on TV. But that was generally during maybe a spring break. So there might not be anybody at the game and you're playing in the state tournament, but it didn't really matter. I mean, I kept breaking it down as, you know, survive and advance, conquer and dominate and just, you know, keep playing. You get to get another game in with your teammates, with your coaches, you get to wear that uniform for another day. So, I mean, that was the coolest thing about it. The expectations though, I mean, it was honestly from 02 to, you know, 20, they were totally different experiences. But it was kind of like a drug. You wanted to make sure you got there every year and it motivated you to work hard during the off season and during the season. And when you didn't want to be there, it really truly did motivate you.
So what did you like the least about coaching?
I didn't like fundraising. I just didn't like doing that. That was very time consuming and very, it's just hard. And you need a lot of the school districts. They don't give you a lot. They get, like for us, they give us basketballs and they'll pay for transportation and that sort of thing. And they'll buy uniforms every 5 years. We were fortunate enough to have a deal with Nike where they got us shoes and basketballs and travel suits and bags. I mean, we got a lot of free stuff from Nike, which was huge. All right. I didn't like the fundraising and I really didn't like, how some parents would behave. I that didn't sit well with me. I mean, I'm a parent and the only time I've ever gone in to see a coach was when my daughter was playing gymnastics and we're paying $350 a month for gymnastics and she was scratched from the meets. And I'm like, if she's not good enough, then tell me and we'll find another sport, but I'm not going to continue to pay $350 to ever go to practice. Right. So that's the only time I've ever talked to a coach. Otherwise, when she was playing, I would always make sure, and I'm not saying I'm perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I wanted to make sure that I was going to thank that coach for putting that time in with my child. Right. Because it is very time consuming. And at the end of the day, if you watch that coach closely, you can see that whether or not they care for kids or not, right? It's not always going to be about the college scholarship. It isn't. To me, you have to look internally from the standpoint, genetically, is your kid an athlete? Or is your kid, does this something your kid wants? Or is this something you want, right? So I didn't necessarily like the way the parents acted. I don't like all of social media from the standpoint, everyone thinks they have a forum to criticize you and they have no clue what you're out. The stuff that I don't really read it that much, but my brother would forward it on to me. And people would say that I'm anti-Gopher because these people weren't, my players weren't going to the Gophers. Well, I don't really have a say in that.
Right.
You know, nor do I want one. I mean, I would love for the kids to stay home and be Gophers for one reason. One, because that way I could go watch them on a consistent basis. And I want to continue to see when they go away. Well, the only time I'm going to get to see them is if they're on TV probably. Right. So that way I'd want them, but it wasn't like I had a say in whether or not they were going to the University of Minnesota. When Lindsey Whalen would call me and she'd want to talk to some of these kids, I'd say, yep, I'll forward it on. All right. Whatever you need, I'll have them call you at such and such time, whatever. And we do that for any coach, all right? Social media, people say stuff about you or they think you're recruiting and all this kind of thing. Or I heard one person say, you know, I can't stand Cosgriff. You know, I think he does, they win a lot of basketball games, but he's just a prick. And I'm like, who are you? Have I ever met you? You know, put your name out there. Mm-hmm. Right. Let's have a, you know, that bothered me. That bothered me a lot because, you know, at the end of the day, Matt, you're making $5,000 doing this, right? I'd make more working at the golf course in the summertime. Right.
Yeah.
But you're working year round. I mean, you're working 40 hours a week. It's on your mind every day of the week, probably half the day. Whether it's you need gym permits or, you know, the balls are disappearing or, you know, coaches getting in contact with you and all those sorts of things. And people lashing out and saying stuff about you that's in print for everybody to read. And now people are going to read this and they're getting this idea about you, yet they've never met you, right? And what happened was, is because I'm convinced of it, is that because we were pretty darn good year after year after year, people resented the fact that, you know, how can they do this year after year after year? You know, he's got to be out there recruiting players. All right. He's got to be training during the off season. He's cheating or, you know, he intimidates the officials, all that kind of stuff. So that would bother me a great deal. And then these bloggers who have these, they sit in the gyms and they critique players for colleges, that bothers me too, because I'm kind of like, have you even ever played the game? Have you ever coached a game? Just because you sit and watch, you have the right, and you have a keyboard in front of you, you have the right to critique a person's game? No, that's not right. It just isn't.
So. Yeah, the social media piece definitely is a lightning rod for a lot of people, I think, good and, you know, there's some good out there, but there's definitely a lot of bad too. So I just want to shift real quick, Kaz, to the girls' game as a whole here. And, you know, there's been talks. You mentioned the relationship with Nike. We had Tony Dorado on the as a guest on my show here recently, and he talked about the girls' game and the numbers, how they're going down. And, you know, how Nike's kind of looking at that as a whole. What are your thoughts on the girls game right now, Kaz? Do you think it's in a good spot overall, you know, inclusive of high school, college, and the professional level?
Well, I think sports in general it's becoming very specialized. I really do. Every kid that I've ever had play volleyball and basketball eventually quit basketball and went on to play volleyball. They just did.
And why do you think that is?
I think it's an easier game. I really do. I think, you know, in girls basketball, you're not going to wear bows in your hair, and you're not going to, I mean, not that I know anything about volleyball, but I just know what I see, right? You're not leaning and banging on somebody. You're not running as much as you do in basketball. It's not, you know, as physical. I think it's just an easier game. And I think, the emergence of volleyball has really become popular around the United States and the Olympics and all that sort of thing. This is just me spitballing here too, Matt. I have no data to back this up. I just know that every kid that I've ever had played volleyball quit basketball and went JO volleyball. I think high school sports, I'm worried about high school sports, especially now with COVID and they're moving seasons and all that sort of thing. I think AAU has become really a factor in terms of where the priorities are being put for players, because they can see that and playing these tournaments in front of all these college coaches, and college coaches like that because they can see 15 games in a day. Whereas if they come to Hopkins, they're going to see one game that day. So I think there's a big emphasis putting on club sports over high school sports. I honestly think with all this stuff going down with COVID, part of me thinks high school sports could end up being an intramural type deal in the future, whereas you're going to have six teams that compete in Hopkins, right, and play intramurals.
Yeah.
I really think it could come to that. So I think I'm worried about it. I think it was a good time for me to get out just because of all the uncertainties with things. So, by the way, having Tony Dorado, maybe one of the nicest guys I've ever met.
Oh, he's amazing.
He's absolutely amazing. I just think when he comes into town, he always tries to give me a call, and he's busier than hell. And he still reaches out to me. And just the stuff that I would sit and talk to him about and learn from him. And he was just an amazing man, and I'm so thankful for him. I just really am. So I want to make sure that, I don't know if he listens or watches this or what, but he was just a great guy. I really love Tony Dorado.
Yeah, and it's funny too, Kaz, you know, just talking to him, talking to you, and then other guests that I've had on the show, when you ask them kind of what's important or why are you successful at what you do, almost everyone says the same thing, and it's relationships. You know, and he was a big one on that, because I know he has a lot, you know, around the country, and you were one of them, and he had very good things to say about you as well. So you were a big supporter of the Lynx, Kaz. I saw you at a lot of Lynx games, and, you know, we had some players at your camps over the years, and we talked a lot about the WNBA. I want to get your opinion on, you know, how much influence do you think the WNBA as a whole and the Lynx, you know, with the success of their four championships, has maybe had on girls basketball here the past, you know, 15 years or so?
Well, some of the coolest experiences I've had as a fan, now I'm talking Vikings, Twins, Gophers, everything, we're watching Lynx games. I, you know, when you sit and think about what we had with this city, you had the best female basketball players in the world that you could watch on a nightly basis, all on one team. All right. How special is that? And, you know, the WNBA, what is it, 12 teams or something like that? So the best of the best are playing in that league. So if you want to watch good female basketball, go to a Lynx game. I mean, just – plus, it's just – it's affordable, all right? The players are approachable. You know, I just for a number of years when they were struggling, we were season ticket holders. And I remember grabbing good seats down by the court, and it was really fun. It got a little bit more difficult to get to those seats when they got really good because then a lot more people were going. One of the best basketball memories I have, not even basketball, but fan memories, was when the Lynx won the title over at Williams Arena.
Yeah.
That was a great experience. I mean, that was so much fun. And that game was just back and forth and battling. And the rivalry, you talk about a rivalry. That was a huge rivalry with the Lynx and the Sparks. Just fun to watch. Just really fun to watch. And I loved Lindsay Whalen's probably one of my all-time favorite players. I just love watching her play. You know, she was genetically cursed from the height standpoint, but heady, tough, and just incredible basketball IQ out there. Just so much fun to watch.
Obviously, with you stepping away from the game, Kaz, I know you got a new teaching position at Providence Academy now. And what's next for you? Do you think down the road there's going to be a desire to get back into coaching, or do you think that this was it for you?
No, this is it. I'm done. I told my players on that last day, I said, I have no desire to coach anywhere else. I'm always going to be a Hopkins Royal. I'm very grateful and humbled that Providence gave me an opportunity to teach at their school. But I really enjoy the teaching aspect of physical education. To me, developing new games and activities and watching kids have fun doing things. And I'm very passionate about, you know, working out and exercising. I will never probably coach basketball again. I am on the chain crew for Hopkins football and for Gopher football, and I do the prep bowl. And that's kind of like, you know, I love being on that because of my friends do it with me, my high school football coach. And being on that Gopher football chain crew is amazing, by the way. It's just the best gig ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, all day deal. We got to have Gopher football this
year. Hopefully, as an alum and a fan of Gopher, I'd love to see it. You know, whether it's the fall or even the spring, depending on what happens. But
football.
Yes. So someone's going to replace you, Kaz, at Hopkins. You know, is that something you're going to be involved in at all? Have you given a recommendation, or is there someone you'd like to see kind of fit in that role?
Well, what I've done is the people that are applying, some are my former assistants. And I wrote letters on their behalf, or people that I knew, and I would write letters on their behalf for them. I told the girls that, you know, they need to be very boisterous about the selection. My only thing is that whoever gets the job, I hope they offer positions to my assistants, because it wasn't just me. It was totally all of my assistants, and they were great people. And if one of them gets it, hopefully they offer the others the job. I mean, we truly were brothers and sisters, and we would fight, no question about it. But at the end of the day, it was about the relationships again, Matt. And hopefully the program stays that direction and maintains that culture of working hard. I know that I'll be a big fan, and I'll be at a lot of games and that sort of thing. And I'm not going to be breathing down anybody's throat or anything like that, saying they should do this or do that. I'm just going to be watching the game, and whoever gets the job, they need to give my brother a spot, because that guy was the man behind the scenes. Let me tell you, you don't realize how much work he did, and they better offer him a spot, because he is so vital to that culture that was created.
That's great. And so now, Kaz, we get to a little part of the program that we call the Bear Trap, kind of play on my last name here. Just a couple quick hitter questions to end the show. So we'll start that. I know you mentioned this a little earlier in the interview, but What would you change about the game if you could change one thing for the game of basketball right now? If it's a rule, you know, one thing Coach Kaz would change.
Well, I would like to see a shot clock for high school girls basketball. I think with the college game, the pro game with the shot clock, I think that's the next step for high school girls basketball.
I would agree. I mean, you hear it on the boys and the girls side. People really want that to happen. And some states are doing it and others are, you know, I think it's just only a matter of time. Right. Next one, toughest coach or team you ever coached against?
Can I name a few?
Sure, sure.
Okay. Steve Ryder at Blaine, Paul Gates at ECU, Kent Hamry at St. Michael, Matt from Edina. They were, you really had to be prepared when you'd go up against them for, you know, you knew the kitchen sink was coming at you. So those are some great coaches that I coached against and made me nervous as heck to compete against them.
Most memorable game you ever coached in?
Wow. That's hard to say. Probably, I mean, when we played Elk River for that first time in 2002, when we went to the state tournament and they were really good. I think they were number one or two. And the place was packed. It was at Monticello, first opportunity. And we weren't the best shooting team, but we were going to bite you in the butt. And we went out there. And it was like the first time, and I always say this to Larry Creed because he was the coach of Elk River, the first time in my life that I actually felt like I was actually getting calls from the officials. we still joke about that to this day, but that was probably the best win per se we've had in the program. And it didn't represent a state championship or anything like that, but it allowed us to say, you know what, we're getting where we need to get. It built the momentum, and we beat a really, really good Elk River team that year. And it was a crazy environment, and we had to come back to do it.
Okay. I love it. And then last question, Kaz, I ask everyone the same question for the final question is, who are your five favorite players, basketball players of all time? You know, it could be a mix of women's and men's players. It could be whoever you want, but it doesn't have to be by position either. You don't need a center and a guard or anything like that, but just who are your five favorite players of all time?
Well, the coolest player in my book was Dr. J. I mean, just the way he looked, and I actually got to meet him at a basketball camp in college. So he's the coolest player. I think the best player I think is Michael Jordan. I really do. I think Michael Jordan was amazing. I loved Larry Bird. You know, I love Larry Bird. And then Nia Coffey, Paige Beckers, Leslie Knight, and any girl that wore a Hopkins uniform. I mean, I just loved just about every player who played for me. So with those three and then the rest of them.
Okay. And then
Pete Maravich, so too. Pete Maravich. Because I always tell Paige she's Pete Maravich, right? And they look at me and they know who she is, but you know, he was that first guy who was doing the no look and that sort of thing. So
well, it's funny when I had Mike Dom on, who's in the top 10 all time Division I scorers in men's history. Mm-hmm. You know, the number one is Pistol Pete. And he didn't even play all 4 years in college, and he played without a 3-point line.
Yeah.
So people don't realize how much that guy used to fill it up.
Oh, he was good. And then the passes that he was doing. I mean, I just, you go on YouTube and watch the old Pete Maravich films. It was great.
And then secret last question, Kaz, favorite Hopkins player of all time. Would it be your daughter?
Oh yeah. Without a doubt. Thanks for reminding me of that.
Yes.
Yeah. Brooke is by far the best kid I've ever coached. Now, when I say that, I'm talking about, this is a kid who came to every breakfast club, came to every fundraising event. I never had to worry about her. All right. She hasn't caused me a minute's worth of problems. She's a good student. She's always looking out for me. And she was always looking out for her teammates too. I'd put her in a game. You haven't played so-and-so. You haven't done this. She would always remind me of that. So by far the best person I've ever been associated with in coaching girls basketball. I love that kid.
Well, to me then, Kaz, that's the ultimate coaching job, because that's you as a father, and you know, her as having those attributes. That's pretty cool for you to say, not only as a coach but as her dad. And you know, that's really neat to hear. And funny, I'm sure you enjoyed that experience being around her.
Funny story is, when we were playing in the state tournament this year, they were introducing the non-starters, right? And her number was zero, so she was always first. And she was ran through the tunnel, and I wanted to greet her and give her a hug and a kiss, you know, because it was the last time I was going to do it. She oh, sorry. She gave me the Cousin Eddie hug, like, get the hell away from me. Anyways.
Yep, but no, that brings us to the end of the show here, Kaz, and I really appreciate you taking the time. You had a heck of a run. Few people had the level of success that you did, and you know, like you said, you built some awesome relationships with your coaches and players, and you know, really put your mark on Minnesota basketball here in the state. So thanks for all that you've done and taking the time to talk with me about it.
Well, thanks for having me on, and then thanks for all the stuff you do for the Timberwolves. God, without guys like you, I don't know if the franchise would still be around. So I'm just so grateful for having me on, and then, you know, all the stuff you do for basketball in the state. So thank you, Matt. I'm humbled that you had me, thought enough of me to have me on your show. So thank you.
You bet. Appreciate it.
Take care, buddy.